baby.
That's, okay. Well, we usually do this. Yeah, made with AI. There you go. We usually do this on a Thursday, but seeing as Eddie will be presenting a special marathon show from the Excel this Thursday, of course, as we mark the marathon, which comes up on Sunday, it means it's time for Fetsy Now. Fetsy Turkoff is the editor of GadgetDetective.com, the host of the Gadget Detective podcast, and is here now to discuss the latest in tech news, his top tech recommendations, and answering some of your tech questions if you have any. Fetsy, great to speak to you again. Let's talk about Booking.com and this reservation hijacking. What is that?
Yeah, so Booking.com had a data breach. They got hacked, essentially. And whilst they say that customers' financial details weren't purloined, they do say that people's names, email addresses, phone numbers, and details of past and present bookings may have been stolen. They reported it 22 days late and got a huge fine for that, about €500,000. They're based in Holland, this particular company. And I just wanted to highlight this fact and maybe just give some advice as well, because I think that either if you're a Booking.com customer or just you're an online user, which is basically all of us, just to give you some advice. So the advice is this, about 6 points of advice. Never trust a message just because it knows real details about you. So one of the risks of this sort of hack is that when they send you an email that tries to trick you, it's got real information. It's got your booking number. It's got, you know, your full name, your address, everything in it. And it makes it much more believable. So don't trust messages that you get unless you know for sure their provenance, and don't think it makes them more believable just because they have information that may have been stolen. If you do need to make contact with a company, don't click on the link inside the email. Either open the official app or manually type the password, or rather the website address, into the browser yourself. That way you can be reasonably sure that you're actually dealing with the real website. If you click on a link, it may appear to be one thing, but it may take you somewhere else to a clone website, for example. So you need to do that. Use a different password for every account that you set up online. And that's a bit of a nightmare to try and remember all these different passwords, which is why the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre recommends that password managers are used. So a password manager is like a big database containing all of your passwords. It does two things. It generates them for you. So when you set up an online account, it will produce a unique and secure password, not one that's easily guessable, and one that is unique to each website. And then when you go back to that website, it will remember and it will enter your email address and your password automatically. You need to secure that well, because obviously that's the keys to the kingdom. That's the giant honeypot if anyone ever got into that. But the way you do that is you set up what's called second factor authentication. So not just a password, but maybe a text message to your phone, maybe a physical key, like a YubiKey, it looks like a USB thumb drive, and you can actually plug it in. So then even if someone tricks you out of your password or hacks your computer, they're still not going to get into your systems because you've got this physical YubiKey. So those are UBIKEY. Really good. I think they cost about £20 or £30, but they're money well spent, to be honest with you. And then for the website itself, so I just mentioned two-factor authentication. Most websites now also offer that for the particular website as well. So it's a bit of a faff because, you know, when you're logging in yourself, you need to have a password. So a password is something you know, but the second factor can be something you are, like an eye scan or fingerprint reader, or something that you own, like a YubiKey or your smartphone. Or it can be an authenticator app, which generates codes that only last for about 30 seconds before they expire. So set up two-factor authentication on pretty much anything that offers it to you. And then be very wary about urgency. If you get messages saying your booking's going to be cancelled, or your account is at risk, or ironically someone's trying to steal your money, you better move it quickly. The urgency that they generate is usually a reliable indication of a scam. Mm. And if you want to confirm whether it's a scam or not, again, contact the company directly yourself. Don't click on any links, because they can often have people standing by on those links to propagate the scam. In terms of a trusted password manager, there's a good one which is free to use called Bitwarden, Bitwarden. If you want to pay for one, you want a few more advanced features, then you can have one password. That's the number one followed by the word password, all as one word. That's a good, strong paid alternative, and it's a good way of maintaining unique data. Because the other danger of this is, if you're one of these people who use the same password for everything or even more than one thing, as soon as they steal your username and password, the first thing they do is they put it into a program that logs onto every major site, every shopping site, every bank, every building society, and tries it just to see if you've used that combination anywhere else. And so a website that can be quite harmless when hacked, relatively speaking, becomes deadly because it's the key to maybe your bank account if you've used it. So that's why it's important to have a different password for everything. So six pieces of advice, not just if you're a booking.com customer, but for everybody.
I wonder about how you feel about the fact that we are using less of the phone. So rather than picking up the phone and going, hello, you know, I'm XYZ and I'm concerned about something, and that we are so reliant on this technology, that is it, are the cracks really beginning to show on it?
I think the thing is, I like phones myself because I like speaking to people, but it's not inherently more secure to do things by phone either, because you don't know. I mean, in the old days when everything was done by phone, what they'd do is they'd phone you up to scam you. That still happens.
Mm.
And then you say, okay, I just want to ring my bank to check. They don't disconnect the line. You dial thinking you're dialing, and then they pretend to be your bank. So there's all sorts of, it kind of goes with the technology. And, of course, AI is being increasingly used to make things. You used to be able to tell a scam because the English was appalling. Now you can tell a scam because the English is perfect, right? So but the same principles apply, misdirection, creating a sense of urgency or panic so you make a rash decision. Fear, so you get AIs now cloning the voice of family members saying you've been involved in an accident or you've been arrested, please send money. And it sounds like your loved one. I mean, it's quite, we have to up our game as they up their games, unfortunately.
It's such a difficult world to navigate, particularly if people aren't necessarily even tech-savvy people. I mean, lots of people will consider themselves tech-savvy, and yet you can still be taken in. So.
Oh, yeah, I've been within an inch of being taken myself, so it's not a question of, holier than thou. I mean, I think we're all at risk of this because we're all human, and we all are at risk of these sorts of scams, and they just get more and more sophisticated, more and more convincing. This ability to clone voices is remarkable. Oh, on that point, if you've signed up for any services where, like, your bank uses your voice as your password or something, cancel that.
Oh, right.
Because your voice is no longer unique, unfortunately. We could make a perfect facsimile of your voice and get it to say anything we wanted. And it was not hard.
I mean, you and I have had conversations over many, many years, and I revel in the technological advances that we are constantly seeing. It is an amazing feat. But on the other hand, are you not at the point where you're just like, this is too much?
Yeah.
Don't make us work so hard. Don't take away all the joy of these new discoveries by counter.
And even just the terms and conditions that companies provide you with. First of all, you'd need a legal qualification. And secondly, you'd need to do nothing else but read and absorb terms and conditions to get through your daily life. The reality is, we don't read it. They know we don't read it.
Mm.
Those contracts, in my view, aren't worth the digital paper they're written on, because a contract is a meeting of minds. But who's going to fight, Google or Meta or whatever? They're just too big. What I do think, and what I have seen, is companies increasingly trying to shift risk to the customer and away from themselves. So I'm looking at, particularly at the banks now, You know, I was using an online banking app the other day and it said, are you 100% sure that this is not a scam? Right? And you can't proceed unless you say you are 100%. Now, you can't be 100% sure of anything in this world, not much less whether or not something is a scam. But that's a very cynical attempt to say, well, they said they were 100% sure. We can't be held responsible. And they try and wheedle out of it. Like, for example, under the Consumer Credit Act, there's a great bit of the Consumer Credit Act called Section 75,
right,
which means that if you pay for something which is over £100 on a credit card, and then there's a problem for which the seller is legally responsible. Let's say you pay, but they don't send you the goods, and then they go bust. Under Section 75, the credit card company becomes equally liable for the transaction as the seller, mm-hmm, as if they were the seller, right? So even if they go bust, they have to give you your money back. It's not a policy, it's a law.
Right.
Every year or two, they lobby the government to try and get out of that, because it's such a good piece of legislation for consumers. And as I say, the disappointing thing is that there's this constant pressure to try and shift responsibility onto us, as you say, in an ever more complicated world. And we can only do so much if we're going to live a life and see our families and go to work or whatever it is that we do. We can't be, you know, delving into every possible risk. But those 6 points I've shared are designed, and I've thought about them quite carefully. What are the, because I originally had 10 and I cut them down. So I said, what are the 6 things that people really, you know, will benefit from and that we can do without having to be experts?
Yeah.
I think if I said one single thing, go and install Bitwarden. It's free. It's, right, it's a trusted bit of software.
And does that work across, sorry to cut you, but across platforms?
Yes, right, it does. And that's one of the reasons I recommended it. Because mm-hmm, otherwise, if you're an Apple user, you could use, you know, Apple's built-in tools, which is convenient, but not as secure and not as convenient. Because if you then get into the iPhone, if you unlock someone's iPhone, then you get into their system. Whereas if you use a third-party tool like Bitwarden, and, you know, as I say, 1Password is also good, then you have an extra tier of security. But, you know,
you already have done all the passwords in one form, and then you're recommending these, whichever app it might be that is appropriate, you then have to start all over again?
No, you can export them if you've got another password manager. Right. But the good thing about having a password manager is not just that it generates them and stores them, but if you then need to change your passwords, you know what you've done, right? You've got a record of all your passwords and all the sites that you're logged into. So, because that's one of the things, is it's not just that you can't remember what your password was, you can't remember where else you've signed up.
Yes, I see.
So this is a great system, but do the two-factor authentication. Do consider spending money on something like a YubiKey. That's really one of the best ways, because someone would have to steal it from you.
And just can I clarify, the YubiKey is something that you plug into a computer as opposed to, you know, you're walking around with your phone, because so many of us do so much on our phones.
Yeah. So there's different designs. There's ones that have just got USB-A or USB-C sockets, and as you say, you plug them into a laptop or a desktop computer. Others have that, but also have what's called NFC, near field communication, which is wireless.
Right.
So you can just tap your phone or your tablet and you've got the same effect.
So
the thing about that I like is that most of the people who try and scam us have never met us and don't have the ability to steal that from us. By the way, when you buy a YubiKey, buy two. Because if you
this is an expensive conversation.
Well, yeah, but what's more expensive, right?
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
true.
Actually, it's a very cheap way of, I mean, I know, you know, money is tight these days, but you know, people have been scammed out of their life savings, for goodness sake. And the reason why you have two is because they are so secure that if you lose the one, you're locked out of everything.
I see.
So you just go and put one in a safe or put it somewhere safe, and just keep it as a backup. It looks like a little thumb drive, you know, like the USB memory stick, often a little bit smaller than that. They're great. I don't know, they're a Nordic company. I forget. I think, are they Danish or Finnish or Swiss? They might be Swiss.
Right.
But you know, trustworthy brand. There are other ones which are a bit cheaper, but I'd go for the brand that you know, that I've used and can recommend personally. Mm.
All right. Well, let's get some of your top tips in terms of things that potentially people could buy. One of them is a chair. Now, you need to sell this chair to me.
I'm not going to sell it to you because I'm keeping it. Yeah. Okay, so look, first of all, they sent me this chair, so you should know that, right?
Buyer beware.
Yeah, it's look, I'm of an age where I slipped a disc in my back years ago, and it's been painful for me ever since. You know, every now and then I have a sort of relapse, lower back pain and all of that.
Mm.
So I'm particularly interested in chairs, but anyone who sits at a desk should be interested in a chair because you're spending up to a third of your life in that chair, so it's important. So this chair is very interesting. It's an ergonomic office chair. It's extremely expensive. It's not expensive compared to a Herman Miller, which would be the equivalent. Herman Miller probably costs about twice as much for a similar quality of chair.
Right.
So it's from a brand called Libernovo. That's Libernovo. I think it means new life. I'm looking at those and thinking that's probably what it means. Mm-hmm. That maybe is an overclaim. Mm-hmm. But it's an ergonomic chair, which is deemed to be a dynamic chair. And it's very interesting because it's an office chair. So the back of the chair is segmented into these sort of slats, almost like in the way that your spine has vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
This has slats. And the point of it is it takes the shape of your spine as you sit. In addition to that, it's got a motor in it and a sort of piston system, and it kind of presses. There's a piston that works sort of in and out and just presses and shapes your spine and releases. It's like stretching your lower back, and it's really quite nice. I've only used it for a short period, so I will revisit this in a few months again. But this is my initial review of it. But it's called a dynamic chair, not just because it's got that flexible back and not just because it's got the piston, but it moves to try and move with you. So when you lean back in it, and you can go back up to 160 degrees, it's almost horizontal.
Mm-hmm.
The arms move back. Everything moves, you know, because if you lean back and then the arms are forward, it's kind of weird. The headrest adjusts itself as you move around. It's quite remarkable. So it has a rechargeable battery because it has that motorized piston system.
Goodness.
But it looks a bit like, you know, in Alien, that sort of exoskeleton type thing.
Oh, yeah.
It looks a bit like that because it's got the chair and it's got all the pistons and stuff that actually shape the chair for you. So it's quite a bulky thing. But it honestly, it's great. And I look forward to sitting in it now. It's now more comfortable than my bed. And I am now considering whether I would be better off sleeping in it as well.
No.
You can get it with a footrest. You can get it with a footrest as well. So without the footrest, I looked it up on Amazon because, you know, good returns policy. £935 without the footrest. Oof. And about £1,000 with. So, as I say, look, that's a real investment. But we spend thousands on our phones and our computers and other bits of tech, and we don't. We sort of ignore that which we sit in.
Mm.
I like the fact that this particular company gives a 30-day money-back guarantee. Keep the box, because if it's going to go back, it will have to go back in the box and you'll have to pay for another box if you need one.
Yeah.
It's a huge box. In fact, get someone to help you in with the box, because it's a huge, heavy box. But it's a sort of thing that you buy hopefully once in your lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think it's a real treat.
Yeah.
And I think if it wasn't backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee, I'd be more cautious about it. But I think, you know, if you build it quick and take the full 30 days to try it out, I think most people will want to keep it. Comes in a light grey colour, which is almost like an off-white, and there's also a black. They sent me a light grey one to test.
Right.
The black one, I think, might be better for most people because it doesn't show marks.
Okay. Well, from your most expensive to, I suppose, a cheaper thing, depending on people's outlook. It's a speaker.
It's a Bluetooth speaker. So we talked about this with Eddie a couple of weeks ago, just in passing, because he wanted a recommendation for a speaker. I hadn't intended to speak about it at the time. But since then, it's taken a huge drop in price.
Okay.
And it's only going to be at that price. It's on Amazon. It's only going to be at that price for a limited time. In fact, let me. I will look it up as we speak.
$119.40 is what
I can see. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because it was 155 before. It's about, they're saying it's about 40% off. So it's 27% claim to this deal as we see it. So everywhere else, this is about £155, £160. So it's down to £119.40. It's a Bluetooth speaker from Sony. It's called a ULT Field 5. It's heavy. Just to give you an idea, it's about 3.3 kilos.
Oh.
I actually bought two of these with my own money. I bought one. And it is a stereo speaker, but obviously it's of a certain size. I guess it's about sort of 14 inch length.
Yeah.
But if you buy two of them, they link to each other wirelessly, and then each one becomes either the left channel or the right channel.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get proper stereo separation, because when they say stereo, it is stereo, but you have to be about 12 inches away from it to get the stereo field effect.
Yeah.
I wasn't 12 inches from my microphone when I thumped it. It's got flashing lights and all that. You can throw it in the swimming pool, it'll float.
But how good is the sound, as someone who loves sound?
It's brilliant. It's sold as being a real sort of bass speaker.
Okay.
It's called a ULT, it's short for ultimate bass, right?
Okay.
But actually what I did with my one is I disabled ULT 1 and ULT 2, and it's got a 10 fader equalizer, so you can boost and cut the bass at every frequency.
Mm.
And I actually preferred that. But it's amazing. And when you actually set up two of them and you have a full stereo effect, it's great. I put some 80s electronic, I'll put some Yazoo on it. I put Ode to Boy by Yazoo on it. And
wow.
I just went back to my teenage years.
You go. It took you back. We're going to have to leave it there. But Fetty, always good to have you on the show. Recommendations there from Fetty Talkup. And of course, you can find him he's the editor of GadgetDetective.com and the host of Gadget Detective Podcast.